With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, hooligans and hoovians, and welcome to the Who A Podcast here on Post Show Recaps. I am your host, Kevin Mahadeo, and coming on here is my clone that turned out real wrong, probably to Schwarzenegger to my DeVito, if we're just going by heights. Adam, what's going on?
Kevin, I'm going to need you to take me to the sauce, please. I need to get to the sauce, please.
How do you know that reference?
We have to get there. We have to get to the sauce. Oh my God. Every single time I said sauce this episode, all I heard was sauce. I could not hear another word besides sauce. And I watched this twice this week because literally the first time I could not stop laughing every single time they said this word. They were so serious. They were like, this is the sauce of all life. And I was like, what do you mean it's the sauce?
I did not hear that. Definitely just heard regular source the whole time. But I mean, listen, to each their own. If it's bringing you joy, I guess that's good during these tumultuous week-long war, apparently.
You know, it's the 1 week war. We've had wars named after quantities of days before, right? Or the 7 year war. Is that a thing? Something
a hundred year. You know, actually, year,
I don't know.
This is the perfect way to bring in our guest for this episode.
Renowned war expert.
And, you know, just by location, where I feel like a lot of these wars took place, involved in a lot of wars over the years. Stuart, welcome to the podcast from over the UK to understand where I'm going with this.
Thanks for having me. I guess this is the Great British Apology Tour. I'm here to apologize for all of it.
This is hilarious. We finally have someone on the podcast who has like any amount of actual context for this show, is like the actual audience for who this show is designed for. Yep. And we bring him on by talking about the wars of Britain.
Listen, they know what they did, okay?
Oh my God.
Very much welcome to Who A. This is really exciting to have you on here. We've had you previously when we've talked about other series and when the podcast had a different name. But here we are talking about Doctor Who. You are from the UK. I got it. Like, what is your history there? What is Doctor Who like on that side of the pond? I imagine big.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty unavoidable. When it kind of... I mean, like, just through, like, sort of pop culture, really, Doctor Who has always been something that has consistently been referenced in, like, all the British media. Like, Exterminate is, like, widely said for, like, common parlance, for, like, especially in the whole voice of, like, Exterminate. And there was this whole history behind, like, kids being scared of Daleks, hiding behind the sofa whenever they came on the TV and things like that. And it's been something that's been really pervasive. And then when they came about with the revival and the kind of newer series, it was everywhere, like completely unavoidable.
Was it a situation where I feel like, and Adam, maybe you could check me on this. I feel like Doctor Who had one of those, like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to say this with the three of us on here. But I feel like Doctor Who had the, like, reputation of, like, Dungeons and Dragons for a long time, where Dungeons and Dragons was, like, the nerdiest of nerdy things. And if you like Dungeons and Dragons, you are a very specific type of nerd.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly say that as the three of us are very frequent purveyors of Dungeons and Dragons, we would certainly all fit under that nerd category. I mean, we talked about this a little bit last week, right, Kevin, of the super who lock of it all, of like people having kind of a specific type of nerddom when it came to Doctor Who. I think that maybe, and Stu, you can certainly correct me on this, I think that maybe applies a little bit more in the US, where it is a little bit harder, not difficult, but a little bit harder to have that kind of mainstream access and conversation and, you know, dialogue around Doctor Who. Whereas this is only based off of literally one other person that I knew growing up. When they lived in England, it was much more prevalent. It was a much bigger kind of cultural thing that you could talk to a greater percentage of the population for. You could make those little references that other people would understand. If I'm in like a work setting or a casual friend setting, and I'm referencing Doctor Who, everyone is like, Adam, what are you talking about, right? Like, and I just don't think that that is necessarily the same in England. I'm very curious, Stuart, if that's been your experience as well.
I set you up because I was hoping that Stuart would say you're wrong. So I just really wanted to get your opinion first so we can see what happens.
No, I'm all for it. I hope that Stuart says we're wrong so much today, Kevin. Like, truly, I would love that so much.
I'm just here to correct everyone. In the sense of like the conversational things, it was quite common to kind of make references to it and things like that. But when people started getting into like, who's your favorite Doctor, and then what's your favorite episode, and like really recalling like the information that actually happened, that would be kind of when you'd veer into, oh, okay, they're going off the real deep end of nerddom, and pop culture would kind of like pull away from it. And even prior to like kind of the revival, there was this almost like stigma that I think is associated with like the whole reputation of D&D before the kind of big D&D revival, of just something that is just a category of otherness, of just nerddom, which there totally definitely was. I mean, even Stephen Moffat in his writings before the Who revival, and he became a Doctor Who writer, was poking fun at himself as a Doctor Who nerd with his own characters who were like Doctor Who fans, obsessives as well. So it was definitely something that was certainly acknowledged.
I think I remember specifically there is I think it's the third season of Coupling. One of the characters goes to like a nerd store, runs the nerd. I forgot. It's the one who replaced Patrick, I want to say, who is Patrick? Hard to remember at this point, but
quite a while ago.
Yeah, there was a whole segment there like about Doctor Who, and there was a lot of that stuff. So like, he's clearly always been a fan, but I remember I got into Coupling through my wife. She had seen it way previously, and so introduced it to me. But when she first watched it, she didn't know Doctor Who, so she didn't quite know the references. But then when she now like knew Doctor Who, she caught a lot more stuff, which was really fun to be able to like understand, like, ah, yes, the Doctor Who-ness of it all.
It's very strange that you bring up Coupling, because funnily enough, I met Stephen Moffat after the Doctor Who proms that they ran over here in the UK. Very passing thing. He was getting swarmed by a bunch of fans, and we just happened to be the ones to bump into him. And one of my first questions was, when are you bringing back Coupling? And he just turned to me and goes, yeah, I think they're all a bit too old now. And I was just heartbroken. And then I told him off for using the big reset button too often. Sorry, spoilers for future series. But
wow. Way to just go at compliment and an insult.
Dropping the name, like, oh, yeah, I met Stephen Moffat. Yeah. I just want to make sure I heard this correctly, Stuart, and I want to get a little bit of context here. A Doctor Who prom? Are those the words that I heard?
This is going to take a bit of explanation. So the BBC proms are a set of classical concerts that the BBC put on every year. It's like 50 plus shows of like classical music, and then what they started to do to bring in younger audiences is they had like Doctor Who themed ones, and like they started bringing in like TV show themes, and yeah, it was a whole like sort of big concert. Okay, and here's another anecdote from that night. This is going to be the last name dropping, I swear. Turns out that we were sat next to Murray Gold the entire time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the funniest thing is at the very end of it, they go, for the final piece, Murray Gold will be accompanying us on piano. And we were looking at an empty piano going, are you sure? And then the guy next to us stood up midway through, walks down to the stage and starts playing.
Oh, my God.
Hand on heart, funniest thing that's ever happened, especially considering we turned up late and apologized.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I also still cannot get over this idea that, like, to attract young people, let's bring in the Doctor Who music. That, to me, is also very funny. I love that, like, hypothetically would work for anyone. It would certainly work on me, but I don't know a lot of other young people that would work on. But that is, I really like that. Oh, my gosh. Stuart's, like, out there living my dream. I mean,
helping with the whole like perception that the British, all British people know each other, like, oh, you know, the Queen, and like that whole thing.
I was about to say this, like, yeah. That feels like that's your story, really, just lands that. Like, this is like, well, everybody just runs into each other on a regular basis over there in the UK, they're just all hanging out. You walk down the street, and oh, there's Emma Watson, right? Like, there it just feels like this is the life you all lead. Did you run into Emma Watson? Is that what's coming next?
Have you met Emma Watson, sir?
I can't say that I have. Unfortunately, no, I don't really run in the same circles.
Okay, if you ever do meet her, I think you have my phone number. Just, you know, if it comes up, that's just one of those
Absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. Here's a random number from someone that I met through the internet. Yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, hype me up a little bit, Stuart. give me something. Don't just be a random guy. I am curious. You know, this is, hypothetically, this is a Doctor Who podcast, so we're talking about Doctor Who and not just all the famous people we've met. I'm still insanely jealous, though. What's your history of the show? Like, when did you start watching it? Have you been like all the old stuff? Have you seen all the new stuff? Who's your favorite doctor, companions, thoughts so far? What's your history of the show?
So I'd never dipped into the old stuff because really it wasn't available at all, until the kind of real revival came about and then people started actually kind of pulling that stuff back on the internet. And but yeah, when it was coming out, I was a weekly watcher, watched along up until pretty much midway through the Capaldi seasons where I started kind of dropping off. But then I have caught up.
Familiar tune.
It is a very familiar tune, sadly enough.
But you're caught up. That's huge. That is unfamiliar, let me just tell you. Okay, so you are fully caught up. I really like to hear that, actually, because it gets a little lonely as everyone is like, oh, I stopped in the middle of Capaldi or right before Capaldi or after Capaldi. It's like, okay, well, maybe catch up. So congratulations to you, Stuart, a true fan.
I mean, slight kind of thing with the Capaldi one is that, like, over here, I have a real admiration for Peter Capaldi because there's a TV show called In the Thick of It. And he is incredible in it, and I have, like, perhaps deified him and hyped him up a little bit too much prior to starting because I thought maybe we might get a Malcolm Tucker version of the Doctor that might be a little bit more kind of like ballsy and a bit brassier. And we got something that was very dramatically different, still compelling, but again, maybe not quite as high as the kind of levels that I'd built it up to be potentially in my mind.
I had the same, we're sort of jumping slightly ahead, but we're in a time travel show, so that's fine. I had the same reaction, right? Like, I expected a little bit of that. I mean, he makes a semi-reference to one of his most famous lines of effety bye, which is just, he said the whole word. But yeah, I love that show. I love the movie, which I had referenced to Adam before, which is In the Loop, that followed up from it. And then the creators of that went on to do Veep, which really just feels like a unified universe. And, like, honestly, missed opportunity not to have Capaldi show up on Veep at all, which would have been incredible.
I would have loved that. That would have been. Yeah. I think I'm on record saying Veep is like one of my favorite shows. It makes me laugh every single time. I always look up the TV shows that you bring up, Kevin, that I have never heard of before. Just, you know, curious, where can I watch them? Weirdly enough, we're 2 for 2 so far on TV shows that are available on. Let me just check my notes here. The Roku channel carries both. Coupling was the first one, and then this is In the Thick of It. So big shout out to the Roku channel for supporting the TV shows that you're bringing up here. Easily watchable.
Good job, Roku channel.
Well done, Roku.
Streaming, again, I've said it before, is a nightmare these days.
I mean, we should say, right, Kevin, Doctor Who now is on Max. We have
it is on Max. We are now no longer HBO Max as of yesterday when we are recording. It is switched over from HBO Max to Max. It's gone from purple to blue. Stuart, I don't know if you know about this, being from the UK. Big thing over here as people are freaking out over the big change. But I think that even might be temporary right now, because I believe once the new season starts, it's all going to Disney Plus, baby. So like, we're gonna get another shift in the location of titles. This is why streaming is a bit of a nightmare, but we're able to watch it now on Max, which is what I did yesterday. Very weird to switch that over. But for anyone who's stuck around this long wondering what the hell is happening, we are actually going to be here talking about season 4, episode 6, The Doctor's Daughter, of Doctor Who. This is a really, really interesting episode for a lot of reasons. Really excited to dive into it, which we will do after a short break.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back. Here we are, The Doctor's Daughter. With Melissa absent, I'll be doing the recap. This is some fun stuff in this episode. So this picks up immediately after last episode. Martha was hanging out with them. She gets locked into the TARDIS. It goes flying out of control. And the Doctor's freaking out, like, I don't know what's going on. I can't stop the TARDIS from going. His severed hand is bubbling. And he says that his hand must like the trip, to which Donna freaks out over, because she thought it was just an alien thing and not his actual hand. And Martha like explains to her that it grew a new one after having it cut off. Totally normal situation.
Yeah, I mean, the good news here is that it is, if you think about it, just kind of an alien thing. You know?
That's, you know, really? Not wrong. Yeah, you're right.
You gotta squint a little bit to see it that way, but it is just an alien thing.
Donna was correct in her assessment on that one.
Yeah.
So the TARDIS finally lands, and Martha comments when they exit how much she missed this bit of emerging into a new, unexpected place. Donna's a little confused by this, because Martha was just yelling about how she went to go home, but they laugh it off and compare the feeling to having a hamster stuck in your throat, which I don't have any idea what that feels like. I'm assuming neither of you accidentally swallowed a hamster at any point and don't know what that feels like, but apparently that's the feeling of walking into an alien planet. Three guards arrive and inspect their hands. They say that they're clean, and the guards take the Doctor and force his hand into this machine. Klein explains that everyone gets processed when they come here. The machine releases the Doctor, and in this pod that's there, like, opens up, reveals this young blonde girl. Martha and Donna wonder who she is, and the Doctor basically explains that it took his DNA, science mumbo-jumbo happened, and poof, this is his daughter. And the girl smiles and says, "Hello, Dad." And that kicks into the credits. Now, knowing that David Tennant and the actress here, Jar Jar Moffat, are now married in real life, every single scene with this is super weird. It is so strange.
Is it super weird, Kevin, or is it the blossoming love story that is the greatest love story of all time? I mean, who wouldn't want to be on camera calling their future husband dad over and over again?
Yeah, apparently some people are into that, as expressed previously on this podcast.
Yeah, we've talked about it maybe too much, really. I don't know.
Stuart, what are your thoughts here?
This is just the weirdest thing in the world, and every single scene was uncomfortable as anything. I'm absolutely with you here, Kevin. This is just, I was like, they're going, okay, right, like, cause watching at the time, didn't know, obviously, because they just met, and it was like something that hadn't happened. On a rewatch, though, you have the context of everything, and it's just, oh yeah, it adds a layer.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of layers to this one. Just as a quick aside here, Jar Jar Moffat is the daughter of Peter Davison, who played the fifth Doctor, I believe, on Doctor Who previously. So she is literally the daughter of a doctor who met David Tennant in this episode. And about a year later, I believe, they end up getting married. They have many children at this point. And it's odd now because he is a doctor, and so she married him. It's just it's very odd. She's the wife and daughter of a doctor.
Kevin, I don't get it. You just hate love. That's all I'm hearing for you right now.
That's clearly
thank goodness Melissa isn't here, because I guarantee she would hate this too. So like, we need to have people on here that love. This is such a cute little love story. The doctor's daughter marries the doctor after they met playing in the doctor's daughter episode of Doctor Who. Come on, you couldn't even script a better love story than that.
Honestly, all that I'm fine with. It's just now every time she's calling him dad, it's just like, ooh, this is...
I believe that I did not clock one singular daddy this episode, and all I feel like we should be thankful for that, right? Well, should be thankful. You two probably more than me. It would have been fine. I think I would have been very okay with it. But
man, one day we're gonna have to delve into this. Not today. One day we're gonna have.
Do you like them now, though, Kevin? I mean, whenever you see like David Tennant and Georgia, like,
yeah,
okay.
I think it's great.
They're very cute together. I like. They have a lot of good social media stuff too. I really like them, actually.
They mock each other constantly. Michael Sheen is involved in their mockery, which is very fun. Another Brit that I love. All right, so she comes out. Credits roll. They head back to this barricaded area, and Klein is questioning the doctor's daughter wife on how ready she is for combat. It's great that she is, because here come the Hath, which are these creatures that come out. They're like fish-like, and they have this little breathing apparatus, this bubbling green liquid. I really actually love the design of these aliens. I think they're really cool and interesting. So the two sides start firing each other like crazy. It's just like old times, because Martha is immediately captured, just instantly. Someone, the Hath, just grab her, run away. Before the Doctor and Donna can do anything about that, the Doctor's daughter sets off explosives and seals the tunnel.
I have to know. Well, yeah, I have to know, Stuart, your thoughts on the companions that we have had thus far. You know, obviously we have Martha and Donna. I'm curious on your thoughts on Rose as well, but thoughts on companions.
Okay, so I understand that Rose is a controversial topic. I like Rose.
Yes! Stuart's vote counts for more too, because he's not American. That's huge.
I mean, this is the thing. Like, Rose is, and perhaps it is kind of tinged with a bit of nostalgia, because Rose was like the OG. Like, she was the one that helped kick all of this off. Without Rose, where would we be? But, I mean, take out the love aspect and the likes of, I like Rose even more. But, like, Rose is generally, like, I don't dislike her. Who I do dislike, unfortunately, is Martha. I think that she is not the best companion at all. I did not enjoy it at the time. On rewatches, found the exact same. I don't know what it was that was kind of about it. I think it was the kind of almost the mild case of like pick me syndrome coming from the kind of whole relationship, which is never nice to kind of witness. But Donna is number one. Like, no one comes close in my whole, like, kind of thing. But, like, Donna is always going to be the best.
Yeah, Donna is pretty fantastic. And I do think, as much as there's a lot of stuff in this episode that I do like with Martha, and I think she's actually better when not a companion with the Doctor, when she got instantly kidnapped, I was like, God damn it. Like, it's like every time. This always happens to her, it feels like. Which is just a little bit frustrating. But the Doctor's furious about this. And the Doctor's daughter basically says that his friend was collateral damage. And Donna, which is, I think, why we love her, gets real snippy, does not take that well. She calls the Doctor's daughter G.I. Jane and tells her that her name was Martha, to which the Doctor's daughter starts screaming, "Why'd you say that name? Why'd you say Martha?" some people get that reference. Never going to not do that when I hear these circumstances with that name, much to my distaste. So they want to go looking for her, but Klein takes him into custody instead. Meanwhile, Martha wakes up next to TARDIS. The half that took her seems hurt. And immediately actually showing, I think, the good stuff of her character, she starts examining his injury. She thinks it has a dislocated shoulder. But again, she thinks it does. She's not sure because it's half human, half fish looking. More soldiers show up from the half. They arrive and they point their guns at Martha. She explains that her status she's a doctor and that she will not leave a patient in an injured state. So she pops that shoulder back into place and the others lower their weapon. She picks herself up and she does have a great line, which is, "I'm Dr. Martha Jones. Who the hell are you?"
Yeah.
For all the stuff that you said, Stuart, I mean, like, this is a pretty great, I think, Martha moment.
Oh, absolutely. And this is where Martha kind of does excel, is when she's not playing someone that is just pining after the Doctor. When she is a character, like, kind of in her own right, and she's indulging in what makes her compelling as a character, she's brilliant. Which is why I think Martha is a much better character than companion. I kind of loved the fact that she was making the assessment, was a bit unsure as to whether or not it was a dislocated shoulder because of the kind of, like, physiology of a complete and utter alien. But I mean, the instincts got to kick in, right? You're there as a medical practitioner, you've got to help people, and I really did love that.
Yeah, I think the Hath are super cool as well. I really liked kind of this introduction to them, a very unique and interesting type of, like, you know, alien and race and stuff like that. So I really like that. And we said this before, but I'll just heap a little bit more praise on to Martha. One of the reasons why I like her so much, she's very similar to the other companions in terms of her compassion and, like, her kindness. But at least from what I am seeing and what I have seen and what I know of Martha, she's much more capable than a lot of the other companions as well. She has experience and intellect, and, like, she immediately pops in and is like, "Yeah, hey, you're an alien race that I've never seen before, and you have green liquid coming out of your mouth, but also your shoulder's dislocated. Let me help you with that." Like, she just jumps right in and is not afraid to, like, get her hands dirty and explain the situation. She has that kind of aura of authority that she carries, some kind of, like, required respect that you have to give her in those scenarios, because, like, she is, like, you, like you're saying, she's the doctor. She is, you know, the Dr. Martha Jones. What the hell are you doing here? So I love it. This is really great stuff from Martha.
It really, thinking about it, I do think out of all the companions, I was trying to run through my head of future as well. We won't go into too much detail, but I think, like, hard skills wise, she definitely is the most capable. I mean, there's other, I think, skill sets that other companions have that are also extremely important. And I'm not trying to downplay any professions at all. But, like, in terms of, like, just hard skills in a field, in a situation like this, I think Martha probably excels the most. All right. So as the Doctor and Donna are being escorted to the camp, Klein explains that they're on Messaline, is the name of the planet. Donna asked the Doctor's daughter for her name. She says that she hasn't been designated one yet. The Doctor calls her a generated anomaly. And Donna's just like, "Oh, hey, what about Jenny?" Which is great because now I can just start calling her Jenny. So Jenny has a name now, and the Doctor does not care at all about his daughter finding a name because he is a bad dad. Donna calls him out on this because, again, that's why we love her. And he says, quote, "Just because I share certain physiological traits with simian primates, that doesn't make me a monkey's uncle, does it?" Jenny comments that she is not a monkey, which I thought was very amusing. At the camp, they end up meeting General Cobb, Cobb explains that the Doctor and Donna were found with no marks, and explains that they were that they used to exist pacifists three generations back before they lost all contact. And he wonders if they are from the those generations of pacifists. And the Doctor basically says just like, yep, that's us all right. I'm paraphrasing, but essentially. He asked who the Hath are, and Cobb explains that the Hath and humans decided to build this new society together on the planet because the outside was too hazardous. But he claims the Hath wanted the planet for themselves. In response, the first colonists used machines to produce soldiers and began the war. The Doctor asks a very important question, which is, how long has this war been going on for? And Cobb says, none of them remember. It's been going on for countless generations. Everyone born from the machine is born with the knowledge of how to fight and how to die. This is a pretty interesting premise. I will say, like, the premise of this setup where there's a land on a planet where a war has been going on for generations is really interesting. And the fact that they are essentially these clone soldiers is also really cool. I feel like this idea I've seen later on in, like, certain sci-fi things, this idea, I mean, we certainly see this on Taran, semi similar to that, but this idea of, like, bringing people in, there's just clones, and they fight, and they die, and they fight, and they die is really, I think, a fascinating premise. Meanwhile, Martha arrives at the Hath camp. They all pet her, which is very strange.
This was a lot, Kevin. This this really was a lot. And I already said this earlier that I really do like the Hath. I think it was a really interesting introduction. I also just wanted to say kind of about this whole premise. They set it up quickly and really effectively. I want to, like, give a little bit of credit to the writing of this episode, because we were like 8 or 9 minutes into the episode. I mean, we were not even at the 10 minute mark. And there was a complex story with, like, some backstory, history, introduction of a bunch of characters that I really understood. Now, I've said this before on many other podcasts, including this one. I'm kind of an idiot when it comes to understanding things. And I was able to get this one, like, really quick. Like, this was is a little complex, and, like, we were able to get through it. And I really like that. So maybe we just stop the petting. Like, maybe we don't. Maybe we don't all do that to Martha in the middle of I don't know. I could have done without that personally. Maybe that's just me.
I laughed a lot. I don't know if you had a response to that, Stuart, but legitimately, when the first time it happened, one of them reached over and, like, you know, a hand on shoulder. I was like, oh, okay. But then they all just reached over and be like, her head and, like, her shoulder. I was like, oh, this is weird. I would be super uncomfortable.
I mean, I understand that, like, sort of different species aliens kind of, like, are gonna have different kind of, like, social conventions, but, like, after a time, like, perhaps, maybe, you know, not just going up to people and just immediately petting them, like, to kind of get to know them is probably, you know, kind of, like, come about naturally from things, or perhaps maybe just being aware of other species and then them not perhaps liking it might just come about naturally, who knows. But I don't know, perhaps the Hath are just really touchy-feely. I mean,
yeah. Oh. That's how they communicate, through petting. But they pull up this holographic map, and she points to a spot and wonders if this is where they are. She's having a little bit of trouble communicating with them because they speak via bubbling into their breathing apparatus, which, again, I think is very unique design and really interesting. Meanwhile, back at the camp, the Doctor is looking basically at an identical map. He wants to go find Martha, but Klein suggests that they do that in the morning because they could use the machines to create basically a platoon from them. Donna hates the idea of using machine to have kids and comments that she doesn't see Jenny as a real person. Jenny defends herself by saying she has free thought and free will, making her just as real as anyone else. Now, I'm curious about this because I've encountered people with some weird takes when it comes to both AI and clones. Are clones real people?
Looking for a hot take on this.
Here's the problem, Kevin. I love having a hot take on something. I really do. I will change my viewpoint if it means that the take is hot. However, I don't even know what a hot take here would actually be considered, because I have had little to no experience with clones, at least I think. And so, you know, I guess you can never really know. I don't know if clones are people. For me, my take here is that it was very weird and maybe slightly out of character for Donna to be so adamant that she is not a real person. That to me is what struck me as like, why is this a hill that we are dying on right now on this alien planet where we're fighting? You know what I mean? Like, why is this the thing that Donna's focused on? I mean, who am I to say that someone is or isn't a real person? I think if you like had to, you know, twist my arm, I would say, yeah, if they can, you know, if they can think coherently in some kind of individualistic fashion in some way, I think the bar for that is like pretty low in my opinion. Yeah, they're a real person, and maybe we shouldn't be spending so much time deciding who is or isn't a real person. I think that's my take.
I think like it comes down to the whole, there's the whole Turing test aspect of it, and like she's clearly passing that because they're talking to her as if she is a real person. I think Donna's judgment of the case is the fact that she's seen her come from nothing to being a walking, talking adult with their own kind of thoughts and opinions in the space of like sort of such a short period of time that Donna isn't really kind of comprehending that it's perhaps scientifically possible. But it raises like a really interesting question to me, at least, of like, because obviously Jenny has like memories and almost opinions put into her mind and stuff. And does that make her any less of a human being because it's happened in such an immediate and short space of time, as opposed to others who get ideas and impressions and thoughts imposed upon them over, like, I don't know, their entire developmental period? Like, what is the real difference there? And really, when it kind of boils down to it, if it's time, for this at least, I mean, there's, in the scope of what we're seeing here, no, there's nothing to say that Jenny isn't real, and it is just Donna being Donna, which is her purpose is to be there, cast the aspersion, then to kind of like learn her own mistake almost and kind of empathize, really. But for my own thing, I was like, yeah, Jenny's real, go for it, why not?
I mean, I definitely lean on the side of like clones being real here. I mean, it's sort of almost AI-esque because they come in, to your point, Stuart, pre-programmed with knowledge and information, limited knowledge and information, but she points out they're essentially born to fight and die. Like, that is what they're programmed to do. But the idea here, as we see in the story, is that there is an element of free will that comes into play and choice, which almost makes it just like the robot becoming sentient, but not, you know, not quite. She's already pretty sentient. But I do know people who have basically said, if AI was real, they are not, they don't count. And like, they don't get rights, they get nothing. I'm like, you're the reason that Terminator and every other thing happens. Like, you're one of those people. It never ends well for us. But yeah. So,
wait, are you a clone, Kevin? Are you?
Oh crap! I've outed myself. This is why I asked the question.
I was just like, this is how it begins.
Yeah. How do you feel about clones? I'm just really curious about that. If this is what I was cloned from, oh man, I really could have made a better choice. Anyway. So Cobb explains a myth that exists about a goddess that breathed life into the planet. And this breath and sigh that she released when done became what they call, or Adam calls, the sauce.
The sauce.
the sauce. Apparently, the sauce was lost in the tunnels. And finding it could help them win this war. So the doctor uses a sonic screwdriver and reveals a previously hidden tunnel system on the map, which Cobb thinks will lead them to the Sloth temple where the Sloth might be. At the same time, the Hats map gets that patch update coming on in and shows those tunnels as well. So Cobb prepares for this big final battle. He wants peace in their time, to which the doctor responds, call me old fashioned, but if you wanted peace, couldn't you just stop fighting? Which honestly is a god-tier comment from the doctor. It's such a fantastic line. I absolutely love it. He has some real bangers this episode, but that one really sticks out to me.
It's a really good doctor episode. And I, you know, Kevin, to your point about all of the secretly hidden maps that were just magically revealed here by a little wave of the sonic screwdriver. The only thing I could think at this point was secret tunnel. And so that's, you know, that's all I had there.
Fair enough.
Onto that point, I was just going to say, like, sort of the whole, like, kind of doctor, like, fighting against that kind of militaristic attitude, I thought was really good. But it was the line that came after the bit where they're kind of arguing and everything, where he's like sort of where he talks about like sort of the same definition, and he goes, oh, you're gonna have to get a better dictionary, and talks about genocide and looking it up.
Yes,
so much double meaning in that whole sentence. And I was just there, just lapping it up, just going, knowing kind of what's to come and what everything that's come before, I was like, oh yes, this is the good stuff. This is the good sauce.
It's Stuart, really... did you hear sauce at all? Like, is the am I you?
Are you alone?
Didn't hear it. Yeah, you definitely didn't hear sauce. Did you?
I mean, I can't say I shared that interpretation, okay. I'm here for it now, Adam.
I really implore every single person who's listening to this, just go back to this episode, just like a minute or two. You don't watch it all again. I'm just like, go to the beginning when they're introducing the sauce and just like listen to that and listen for the word sauce, because I promise you, you'll hear it and your life will be forever changed and you'll probably laugh as much as I did. You won't laugh as much as I did, but you'll maybe you'll chuckle. I think that's the best I can say. I could not stop laughing, but I'm hopeful that people listening will chuckle.
Still chuckling when I said it several times just now.
Because they're so serious. They're so serious about like the breath of life. The goddess is breathing the sauce.
A lot of people are very serious about the breath of the wild and the tears of the kingdom. Anyway. But yeah, Stuart, I agree, right? Like this moment where Cobb is basically saying, right, like peace means killing the other side. So, you know, genocide. And the doctor, to your point, has this thing where he's like, you better find yourself a dictionary and look up genocide. And there'll be this picture of him and the caption read over my dead body. What's amazing is that you're totally right. There's so many levels to that statement, because if you really think about it, like if you look up genocide, there very well could be a picture of him, considering he committed genocide during the time war. And like, there's just so much there that works really well on multiple levels, both to your point, past and future, that we won't say anything about here. But who knows what that could mean. But Cobb threatens to, quote, kill his woman if the doctor interferes. And both the doctor and Donna once again dismiss the idea that they are together in any way, shape, or form. Jenny ends up getting detained along with the doctor and Donna because the soldiers are worried that she might be from this pacifist stock. And in the cell, Donna notices another plaque with numbers on it, which they had seen earlier in the episode. And she's wondering what it could possibly mean. The doctor decides they need to come up with a plan to escape and stop the ensuing bloodbath. And Jenny comments, because of how he's talking about this, that he's just essentially like a general. He's planning and scheming. The doctor tells her that he's trying to stop the fighting without violence. And Jenny tells him every soldier is, which my response is, are they? It's a very strange statement. I don't quite get it, but I don't know. The doctor tells Donna to talk to Jenny. Talk to this little girl, please. But Donna's enjoying watching this, encouraging Jenny to basically keep poking at the doctor. The doctor ends up calling Martha on the cell phone. He's relieved she's all right. And he learns that he's messing with the map, gave the half the same directions to the sauce as Cobb. The doctor instructs Martha to stay where she is and to be safe. He wants to leave Jenny behind when they escape, saying that she belongs with the rest of them. And Donna says that she belongs with them. She uses a stethoscope, which I assume she must have gotten from him. No idea where else she would have gotten that.
You don't keep a stethoscope on you at all times, Kevin, just in case?
I'm not a doctor, so I assume that Melissa does, probably.
Okay. Yeah, every time I've been with Melissa, she has had a stethoscope. She sometimes pulls it out and just listens to random people's heartbeats. It's a little weird sometimes, but you know.
They give it to you once you graduate. They're just like, here you go. Yeah. It's like, and you I'm have not to that keep type it. Of doctor. Yeah.
Well, it's like keeping the baby alive in not like the high school class. You have to like keep the, you know, baby. It's
with
it's
the egg, you mean? Like the egg?
Or the sack of flour or whatever, you know, and then this is you have to do with the stethoscope.
Excellent.
That'd be pretty funny if that was true, actually. If you had to, like, in 10 years, all right, bring out your stethoscopes.
Yeah, do you still have it? Because if you don't, you lose your medical license.
You lose it, yeah. That's the only test, yeah. We're doctors. We know what we're talking about.
Yeah, we're no one here to contradict us.
Yeah,
so.
we're experts on medicine, baby.
This is how it works. An absence of professionals.
Yeah, correct.
Absolutely. Of course it is.
But yeah, she uses the stethoscope and she finds out that Jenny does in fact have two hearts, which makes her a Time Lady, as we learn they are called. But the Doctor says that that isn't accurate. A Time Lord is more than just the two hearts. They are a sum of knowledge, a code, a shared history, a shared suffering, but it's all gone now, all of it gone forever, which is really great. And he tells her about the Time War and how he fought and killed. And Jenny asks them, then how are we different? Which is really, really, really interesting.
It's a good question, right? I mean, how many times do we see the Doctor kind of get up on his high horse and tell other people what they should and shouldn't be doing all the while? Like, we know what he did. And he still hasn't even done all the stuff he's going to do. So, we see it quite a bit. And I always enjoy those lines that they're kind of, you know, intentionally hypocritical to not only make us think, but also to make them think. I think it's a very, very good stuff within the show that we see pretty frequently.
I think it comes from an authentic kind of perspective as well, though, because like the Doctor isn't wanting to reapproach those feelings or isn't wanting to have to explain himself, because he doesn't want to reveal what he has done that is monstrous in his own kind of mindset. So he kind of wants to just almost impart that lesson onto people and just say, look, just trust me. But he can never articulate it, because if he does, then he has to acknowledge it. And it's just, yeah, it's that subtlety in the kind of like choice of dialogue that is really kind of lovely about this, because it's just so, it makes me feel so bad for him, because you can tell that there's so much suffering going on and that he can't articulate, because he's the Doctor, he's the special kind of like guy that runs around everywhere and saves the day and things, and yet he's carrying this huge burden. Yeah, it's really lovely.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because like I do think there's like unspoken stuff that sort of gets, and I appreciate the episode and the writing kind of paces out those moments, right? The idea of then how are we different? Because it's unsaid, but like I think the big difference obviously is that the Doctor did do that, but he has chosen not to anymore. He's chosen, as we will see, never again, which I think is really fantastic and really kind of showcases the differences there about like the idea of choice and not having to be what you were before or what you are programmed or ordered to be, which is, I think, you know, really, really great stuff, ultimately. All right, so meanwhile, Martha and the Hatch she helped are studying the tunnels on the map. They note that the distance above ground is shorter than the distance through the tunnels. Oh, so she plans to beat everyone to the sauce by going above ground. They go together, and throughout this entire exchange, the Hatch is just like bubbling at her, and it feels very, very Chewie and Han from Star Wars. Like, it is that sort of just like she starts understanding him, able to communicate. We only hear her side of the conversation. I don't hate this. I think it's very fun. I think they're a fun duo, and they do a good job, like, I think, having them feel like they're forming a bond.
Yeah, and I think like the lack of understanding that was immediate, I think, was really huge to this part of the story, because I think that they could have just kind of hand-waved and been like, oh, she was in the TARDIS, she got the language understandy thingy and whatever, it's fine. But I like to, at least personally, I like to read this as she's becoming more comfortable and more aware of those around her and like learning to communicate, because she has like that ability to not only empathize, but also to, you know, be highly intellectual. Like I said before, she's very capable. And I think like her picking up on, maybe it's not like word for word, whatever, but like speech patterns and tone and understanding and stuff like that, I think is like really key to the empathetic nature that we are seeing of Martha. And one of the reasons why I like her, I know Stuart is down on Martha overall, and I'm not like here to disagree with overall. I think this is one of the better Martha episodes. And I think that like she really is showcased here, partially because she's on her own basically the whole time and gets to like do things on her own with no one else who is speaking the English language. And so she gets all of the space, which is awesome. But like, I think that she utilizes it really well and takes advantage of that opportunity.
I think I completely agree. And the way in which Martha shines in this episode more than others is the fact that it's leaning into something that is about her character. The fact that like she is able to communicate lends itself to the fact that she is a trained doctor, and trained doctors have experience with dealing with people that aren't necessarily able to communicate exactly what's wrong with them, but she has to be able to interpret that. And I think that that absolutely plays into her ability to be able to talk with a creature that she doesn't necessarily understand the language of, but understands when when they're in pain and when they're willing to go along with her wanting to go up to the surface and expose herself to God knows how much radiation without really giving it proper thought. Who knows? I thought we were going to have a real Chernobyl moment for a while when I first watched it, but no. But it's, I think, speaks to how she is, yeah, like you said, like sort of a very intelligent character who can kind of obviously use those skills to her advantage. And here's where she shines.
Yeah, that's a really good interpretation of that, and I hadn't considered, and I really, really love that, the idea of, like, as a doctor, you sort of have to communicate with people who sometimes can't communicate, and you have to kind of figure that out. That's a really fantastic read. So, back at the cell, Jenny pulls the old, my, aren't you so handsome trick on Klein, who's guarding them, and is able to get them free. I have never actually tried this in D&D, and I feel like that's a missed opportunity. I can't really do that with the character I have currently. I do not think it would work, but it seems like it would be fun.
Kevin, I really thought, role. I just really thought you were about to say, well, I've never tried this in real life, but I really, really thought that's where you were going with that. And I was about to be like, whoa, okay, Kevin.
All the times I've been in a prison with,
you've never like tried to, you know, seduce the guard, seduce the baddie, something like that. You've never tried that in D&D ever. That's like one of my go-tos, you know,
yeah,
you gotta just go for it.
I don't think I've ever been in a situation that lent itself to that. And whenever I wasn't playing a character that did that. Like, I think in my space-based character, who is basically based off the Doctor and goes through regeneration phases, one version of them was hypersexual, but was never put into an encounter that required that. So they never had to do it. And now, after a regeneration, very different, not about that. So... not an opportunity, I think, that would be able to pull that off, unfortunately. One day.
You're saying is you're asking for an opportunity to embrace this kind of character / scene.
I almost want to with the current character I play in our game, just because they are very robotic-ish. So it would be very funny to have that entire dialogue exchange happen.
All right, well, don't threaten me with a good time.
So... Jenny's able to pull this off. They get free, but they go around the corner and there's another guard waiting. And Donna basically offers to be able to distract this one herself, as Jenny did. The Doctor tells her that she should save her womanly wiles for an emergency. He didn't insult her, but he basically did. Cruel. Instead, though, the Doctor finds a better distraction with a toy mouse that he apparently has. That man has a lot of stuff in his pockets, I guess. He's able to distract him and Jenny knocks him out. They find a hidden tunnel and Donna sees yet another plaque and she asks for a pen and paper, noticing the numbers are counting down. Jenny makes this comment that they're always thinking and she seems stupefied by this idea as she just tends to follow orders.
Okay, that was like a very relatable comment though. You're always Jenny. Thinking. No. Dear Lord, no, I'm not always thinking. I mean, you've never had people in your life that you're like, wow, your brain just like simply is active more hours of the day than mine is. So, like, have you ever had those people that you, I mean, I for sure have. And I've just been like, I don't know how you do it. Like, I just don't know. I have to turn my brain off for a couple hours a day just to like be able to function.
I have to boot up every morning. Like, yeah. Legitimately... once I'm booted up, I can run all day and I'll run all night if I have to, right? Like, I don't really even like shut down. I just basically am just like, I should probably go to sleep. And then I just lay down and I try to go into sleep mode. But in the morning, when I'm booting back up, it definitely takes me a while to just go fully go. Because there's some people who are like, it's morning, let's do this. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? How? I'm not that type of person.
I mean, I'm just surprised to hear that there's an off mode. Apparently, you can just stop thinking. Is that a thing? I've been told to do it. I just don't know how.
Well, yeah, it's never when you want it to be. I'll just tell you that for free. You never can stop thinking when you actually want to stop thinking. I also have a secret to admit, because I feel like this is very taboo in today's day and age. I'm kind of a morning person, but I'm not, but I'm not a morning person in the sense that like, oh, I want to like go and do a bunch of, I'm not like, let's get up and go jogging in the morning. Like, that's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm like, okay, well, I have to get up ridiculously early for my job, so I might as well get up a little bit earlier, get to Panera, get my coffee. And then like, we're, you know, then we're starting the day. Like, I'm the kind of guy who will like put 7 a.m. meetings on the calendar. And it's like, that's just a normal
day. You're a monster.
Yeah. But I also stop doing things at like 2:30. Like, basically, you know, once we get into the afternoon, I'm kind of like, well, you know, I've done enough for today. We can, let's just pack it in.
But absolutely the right way to do things. Get everything done in the morning, enjoy your afternoons.
Yeah.
I don't understand people that like kind of sleep all the way in for the day, waste the time and stuff. I'm like, yeah, if the sun's up, I'm up, let's go.
Yeah.
Nope.
I'm right there. Yeah, I was just talking, I even forget how I said this conversation, but I was like, we should do a morning podcast, because everyone's always like, oh, let's get the podcast going later in the day, we're into like the evening. I'm like, okay, well, I'm up super early in the morning, let's do a morning. They were like, absolutely not. So
absolutely
I don't know.
Again,
would we ever do this in the morning, Kevin? We wake up early?
No, my boot up would not work. I would not know what's going
Melissa
on.
Melissa might still be awake from the night before. I feel like we could pull this off. I'm just going to tell you right now, and Melissa can confirm this, there have certainly been times where I've woken up and she has still been up, and we have had a conversation like two ships passing in the night, except we crash into each other in the DMs. Like, that's basically how that goes.
I was just going to say, we've done the all-nighter on the Discord before. An experience. All right. So, she asked them. Yeah. Jenny wants to know what they're going to do or what they do out and about. Out there in the big wide world, Donna says that they save planets, rescue civilizations, defeat terrible creatures, and do an outrageous amount of running, sometimes holding hands, as Adam would point out.
Wait, we have to stop down here. I'm so sorry, Stuart.
Oh boy,
running,
we gotta ask everyone
whilst holding hands.
Okay, so like, I've heard this and I've been debating the entire time I've been listening as to whether or not I am for or against it. It's difficult because while it is inefficient, there is also an efficiency to the direction of where you're going. Because there's nothing worse than running to the edge of a corridor and then someone goes right and someone goes left. Unless you're holding hands, you can't drag them along with you. Does it slow you down? Perhaps. In fact, no, not even perhaps. It definitely does. But if you want to run in the same direction as someone where you don't know where you're running, absolutely, you've got to hold hands. It's a necessity for this situation.
Yeah,
I'm just taking wins after wins today. I mean, seriously, this is incredible. And I would further make the argument that never, ever does the Doctor know where he is actually going. And so, you know, if we're talking about aimless running, this is it to a T. So I basically, we've decided as a podcast now, officially, I've tallied the votes. We are a pro running while holding hands podcast.
Listen, that's a solid argument, and I almost have to say, when you're in corridors, it probably makes sense.
Amazing. I feel so vindicated right now.
Yeah,
so many episodes, everyone's been like, Adam, you're crazy. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm happy now that we invited Stuart onto this podcast. No, this is great. So they manage to get the door open just as the army is arriving. They seal it shut behind them. They start running down the corridor and lasers, which, to your point, good if they're holding hands. You could just jerk the person back before they run into the lasers. So Jenny decides that she's going to go back to hold them up. The Doctor tries to stop her, saying that he doesn't want any more dead. Jenny says that it's them or us, and she's trying to save their lives. The Doctor tells her that she doesn't have to kill them. Killing, after a while, it infects you, and once it does, you're never rid of it, which is a really, really great line. Again, banger of a line. Jenny says that they don't have a choice, and he says we always have a choice. Really the thesis, I feel like, of this episode, but also of the Doctor in a lot of these situations, hence why the 10th Doctor especially is so adamant about giving people a choice before making a decision against them. And I really love that about this particular version of the Doctor. So she runs off and she starts opening fire, but everyone takes cover so she doesn't hit anyone. The Doctor tells Donna, told you, nothing but a soldier. Donna says that she's trying to help. And Jenny stops shooting for a moment and looks at her gun in contemplation. The doctor gets the lasers down, and Cobb tries to convince Jenny to come back to them. She has a clear shot on him, and instead shoots a pipe, lets off some steam from there, and manages to take off towards the doctor. But the lasers come back on. She tosses her gun aside and goes all Catherine Zeta-Jones on the lasers, except with way more flipping and less sexy stretching. But I want to point out, before she does this, she says the words, quote, "Watch and learn, father." Again, does not get any less weird. In fact, this might, for me, be the weirdest line with them in this moment.
Father? That's the line that does it for you?
Watch and learn, father is just like, ooh, I don't, I think because there is such a weird, the reason why is because, like, dad is like, weird enough. And, like, they never say daddy, which would have been, like, real weird. Father, I think, is a different level because you have people who will remain, I think, nameless for this podcast that have said in a very conservative mindset of like, well, we refer to husband and wife when we talk. I refer to her as mother and she refers to me as father. I'm like, that's weird. And so like it added this other layer to me that when she said watch and learn father, because again, knowing they're married and knowing that there is a weird thing with that with some people that they call each other mother and father is very odd. So I was not into this particular line.
I am lost in the proverbial sauce in terms of what you're referring to here as the basis for why father doesn't work. But I'm going to say something, Kevin, that might be slightly concerning to you. So you might want to, I don't know, cover your ears or something. I can almost guarantee you that she has called him daddy more times than she's called him dad that we are seeing on the screen. That's all I'm going to say. Put that in whatever context you want.
What they like.
Wow.
It doesn't matter. I guarantee you it's more, okay? And I think that that right there is enough reason to have the word father not be as weird. Maybe the other thing. And I would certainly not judge someone for their own whatever sexual preferences or dirty talk. Live your lives. I don't care. I, at least personally, do not ever see the word father used in that kind of context, right? Like, I've never, like, and again, maybe this is just me being way too vanilla, but I have never been in a situation where father has been used that way. And I hope to never be in a situation where father is used. So, like, I didn't read that as, like, a... oh, this is weird on a rewatch knowing the context because like father is never that, you know?
Yeah, no, let me clarify. It's not in that sexual context. It's just a husband and wife, like they refer to each other as mother and father. And it's weird because like her saying this in this, referring to him as actual dad, but that IRL is married, just added too many layers to the weirdness for me.
Are you
That's
calling
I mean.
Someone out specifically here? Is there a reference that I'm missing?
I mean, I guess it's not the only person who does this for certain, but it's certainly a public figure who has said it. And I'm like, yeah, this explains a lot. It's Mike Pence. Like, he's definitely talked about this before.
Yeah.
And like groups like people like him tend to do that sometimes. And it's weird. And so like, there's a lot there that's just like, ugh. And so that's why it's problematic.
Okay.
Well, so I was not on board with the super weirdness until Mike Pence was mentioned. Yeah, I'm all in with Kevin now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. I hate it too. You know, and I'm an Indiana boy, so I have a lot of experience. He was my governor for a lot of years.
As is my wife and my sister lived. Anyway. All right. So.
Not this podcast. But also kind of this podcast. But, you know.
The doctor is very impressed with Jenny's flipping. And they have a real father daughter moment. Again, weird. As she explains that she did have a choice and chose not to kill him. It's actually very sweet in terms of the context of the story.
Why do you say that so begrudgingly, Kevin? You're like, I guess it's sweet. I guess it's a little sweet. It's a great little moment here.
It is a great moment. If we get listener feedback about like people's feelings on the daddy situation, this is going to be wild. But anyway, Cobb comes around the corner and the doctor tells him that if the sauce is a weapon, he's going to destroy it. And Cobb says one of them will die, but it will not be him. Meanwhile, we're cutting back to Martha and Hathi, as I'm calling him. They get to the surface, despite Hathi's protests about, like, this is a really bad idea. But while traversing across the barren wasteland, Martha falls into quicksand, which, what? I guess there's just quicksand on this planet. Hathi jumps in and saves her. However, while he's able to push her to the edge and she's able to crawl out, he can't get out himself. And we watch as he sinks below the surface like freaking Artrax in Never Ending Story. Martha devastated and weeps in sorrow. And I was like, I feel that because of that immediate connection I made. I was like, this is very sad. No one else made that one?
No, I was too focused on the sauce. I could not. I didn't have time to think about the Neverending Story. Oh my gosh. This was very dramatic. And I feel for Hathi here because by all accounts, it seems that the way that was on top in the radiated zone was not faster at all. No. It seemed like you gained no time by doing this. And instead, we just murder a half. That's all that happened above ground for no reason, basically. So yeah, I don't essentially. Know. I was a little confused by why we needed to do this. I like the general idea of showing that Martha has like clearly gained their trust and like they are supporting her and like are willing to sacrifice for her cause and for her beliefs. That's like great. Did we need all of this? Like okay, it was maybe a little much for me.
Especially considering it doesn't really get like spoken about too often. Like when they eventually meet up and stuff, she's just like, yeah, I took the surface. No mention of her buddy that like happens to die. And also like the whole scene when like he goes under and like, okay, maybe there's some hope. Maybe there's like a thing underneath, like a portal or something rescued. No. You hear the sound of smashing glass from the little kind of like bubbly thing on his face, and you're like, oh buddy. No.
Yep.
We could have mentioned it a little bit later. Like it would have been really funny if at the confrontation confrontation that we had a little bit later on here, one of the half was like, so where's Greg?
And that's what I was like, yeah, when they get at the end, it's just like, hey, where's Greg? And it's just like, oh, about that. But we're all real sad about Jenny. No one cares about Greg, apparently.
What's an F about Greg?
She's brutal. Poor Greg. All right. So Donna and Jenny talk about exploring new worlds together. The doctor suggests that Jenny's going to be coming with them and that she will get to see all these new worlds herself. Jenny runs ahead in excitement, and the doctor admits to Donna that he's actually been a father before, but he lost all that a long time ago, along with everything else. This is actually a callback to the first doctor and his companion, Susan, who was canonically, at the time, the doctor's granddaughter. There was a lot of weird stuff in that first season. There was implications that he was essentially, I believe, half-human. That's all been changed at this point now. He is full-time Lordian, but this is calling back to that idea. Suddenly, his reluctance, of course, at having a daughter makes a lot of sense. Donna says she didn't know that and says to him, you talk all the time, but never say anything, which is an incredible line.
What a freaking line. Oh my gosh.
Really, really good. The doctor said that there's essentially been this hole in him that he has painted over, and seeing Jenny reminds him too much of that. Donna thinks it'll fade, but the doctor says that part of him is gone and never coming back. And Donna tells him that she's going to say something that she's never said to him, which is that he's wrong. Meanwhile, Martha's continuing her solo adventure. She eventually arrives at the temple. About the same time, on the opposite end, the doctor, Donna, and Jenny arrive. The doctor opens the door on his end, which does the same for Martha. Just everything is hooked up together, I guess, here. They uncover that the temple is actually a spaceship. The doctor wonders why it's so well maintained, despite supposedly having been abandoned for so many years. They learn that it is indeed the original ship of the first colonizers. And when they arrived, they had used robot drones to build the city. But the mission commander ended up dying, creating this power vacuum. Donna is staring at this digital clock on the wall. And because she's dealt so much with, I forgot what exactly line of work, but she's because she's been doing this type of work so much, she's able to realize that the numbers are dates. Adam, do you remember what this was?
Yeah, so she's a temp, right? Like we've heard her talk about some of her experience before, but she temped for, I believe, 6 months at one of the local libraries, and she learned the Dewey Decimal System like that. One of my good friends we actually have a weird amount of librarian friends, but she has been working at the local library for a while now. She went to school for library science, and she still like struggles with the Dewey Decimal System. I don't understand the Dewey Decimal System whatsoever, but apparently Donna has got it like that.
I also have a librarian friend, and they also don't like the Dewey Decimal System, but they also have a much larger rant about how it's racist and other stuff. So that's a whole discussion, I guess, topic that's going on there. I don't know what we'd replace it with, but yeah, apparently problematic on a few levels.
Maybe author and title a book? I don't know. That's a... I don't know.
Like a bookstore? What are you, nuts?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we do something crazy like that. I don't...
Yeah. So where was I here? Right. So they find out that the numbers are dates and that the city was built in sections outward from this core of the ship and that the dates are marking when each section is completed, counting up, not down, because Donna had noted that it looked like it was counting down to something. The doctor is very excited about this discovery. He's very like, hey, man, good work, Donna. But then Donna points out that according to the dates, the ship only landed 7 days ago. And the generations mentioned by the soldiers aren't years, just batches of clones, essentially, which all die and then pass on the legend. We should probably talk about this.
Probably, yeah. I'll say right off the rip, I really liked this. I thought this was
interesting.
I mean, yeah, I thought it was a fantastic little twist here at the end. It was something that, like, you know, I'm certainly not going to say that I like predicted it or called it the first time I saw this, but I did. It was pretty obvious that they were like some kind of dates or like, you know, system of demarcation or something like that of tracking or logging or something. Right. And I really like that Donna's the one that's able to figure it out. This is not the first time that we have seen Donna use some of that expertise and like real world experience that the doctor would just never have to be able to solve something like this. And I think that you might rail against this, Kevin. I don't know. I'm excited to hear it. I think this is pretty good writing. I think that like the combination of this story being something that is both technological, alien, and human in nature, I think it's just really interesting because it's not like this, oh, alien race does something differently that only the doctor can understand. This is like people built stuff and marked the days. Right? Like, this is not like a big technological, big whatever alien spaceship situation. This is just like, hey, we finished building this room on Thursday. Let's mark it down. And so I really like that Donald's able to have that experience. And then just the general idea of, again, the combination of things get lost in translation. We're going past down quote unquote generations through all these clones and whatnot. That's a very human thing that like we could relate to, not in terms of the 7 days of it all. But how many things in our culture and society are just the way that they are because we have always said that it's the way that it is and we're never, you know, like that. We could really get into a lot of conversations about that kind of stuff as well. But then you combine that with the technology that they have and the whole sci-fi of it all, of the Doctor Who of, okay, we're going to clone people. We're going through generations in a matter of hours. And this is all that they have here. So I think it's really good writing that's able to combine a lot of the really core elements of Doctor Who into an interesting, not predictable, at least in my opinion, little bit of a one episode story here that had really interesting characters. So I'm very high on this. To me, this is like, this is what timey-wimey is, and I think they do a really good job of it.
Stuart, your thoughts?
So when I first watched it, like back in the day, I remember thinking, because I weirdly had a strong memory of like watching this, is that I thought that it was done like really getting a really easy kind of shot of something the Doctor was ignoring, and so she kind of kicked a goal into an open goal. But the... Then when I like began to think about it and stuff, and I was thinking, no, it's actually like to what Adam said, it's a very human thing to kind of notice. Humans spot patterns. It's just in our nature. And it's one of the things that we excel at that machines don't. Pattern spotting is just something that we inherently have a knack for as a species. And it's one of the things that we tend to be really great at. And the other thing as well is Donna's ability to like think about the generational kind of aspects of things is that she's the one that's giving Jenny kind of more of a kind of a bit of an understanding. Like she's willing to kind of think that Jenny is more of a like a being in their own kind of right, and is willing to think about Jenny as a concept, as someone that has just been kind of made and is suddenly apparently like there, and it was a very kind of rapid thing, whereas the Doctor is thinking like big brain, bigger concepts, and is looking beyond those things. And I thought, again, it's another aspect of why I love the Doctor Who dynamic of the companion being there not to articulate to the audience the things that we need to have articulated us for exposition purposes. They're there to be a like almost like
a filler for all of the aspects of humanity that the Doctor doesn't have. And this was a perfect example of it. And I think some really excellent kind of writing. A little bit when you think about the practicalities of things, of just why are they putting it on such a big plaque? Is that something that would happen? I don't know. I'm willing to take a kind of leap on that front. And then the same thing for just in terms of thinking about the logistics of, like, where the heck are all these previous generations? Do they just, like, have they got just a pile somewhere that we don't know about? But forgiving those things, I mean, I really like this.
So that's sort of where I land, and I honestly love so much about this reveal for all the reasons you say it, Adam, and for the reasons, Stuart, you just brought up. I think it works really well. It's a fantastic moment for Donna. I love what you pointed out, because it is very accurate that humans spot patterns. It's one of the things we do. Even when we make patterns that shouldn't exist, we just do it because it is literally in our, like, biology and DNA. It's just we can't help it. And I love that Donna's able to do that, and the replacement of, like, the thing that the Doctor doesn't notice because he's not human, because he's too big brain thinking about other stuff. I love the idea of, like, the passed down in legends, all of that stuff works. What the logistics is, it comes down to for me, is just 7 days. I'm like, what? Like, that part, I'm just like, what? 7 days? And I know they wanted it to be dramatic, but I'm like, you could have done a month, and I feel like it would have been as dramatic. But, like, I have a zillion questions coming out of this, not the least of which, to Stuart's point, is, like, where the hell are the rest of them? Like, and we've been around them for a while in this episode. Like, I don't think this episode took place in the span of an hour. It doesn't feel that way. So, like, what happened? Like, if they're making, like, 20 batches a day, where are the rest of them? So, like, there was just a lot of questions on that for me with the just the 7 days part. But concept-wise, I agree. I think the writing is really brilliant and how this was pulled off and the themes of what they're saying and how things get passed to legend and stories and how things can get corrupted and how you're going to end up fighting a war that you shouldn't be fighting because you don't even remember why you're fighting it. All that stuff is so... Yeah, I mean...
Yeah. That's interesting.
What a podcast we're on to not be able to talk about a lot of that stuff in too much detail. But yeah, it's I think, very human and very relatable. It's just... The 7 days thing, I was just like, well, could have done a month, man.
Do you think it could have been, like, maybe a little more? I feel like some of the generational, like, that word makes us think that it is a lot more than it actually is. Like, I think that you could do one or two batches / generations or whatever a day, and I think it still would have that same effect that we're talking about, the humanity of things being overly exaggerated and, like, oh, generations upon generations. That could just mean, like, three or four. Like, it does, you know, I mean, like, it doesn't, they're not actually coming out and saying, okay, well, 15 times a day or whatever, like, this is how often it gets recycled or refreshed or whatever. I think part of this is probably also to demonstrate that, like, the you know, the lack of confidence and belief that we should have in the validity of the actual words they're saying. I think some of this is a little unreliable, which I think is part of the point, and okay, at least, you know, in my opinion, because, again, that's just humanity. We're as unreliable as they are, even if they're clones, and we're not, or all of us but Kevin are not.
I really messed that one up. I should cut this podcast.
Yeah.
So they end up meeting up with Martha, who told them that she took the surface route. Again, to your point, Stuart, does not mention Hattie at all. They suddenly smell flowers, and they race up to the very top of this area, and they see a garden that's being kept alive by the sauce. It's revealed to be a terraforming device. The two factions show up. They're ready to kill each other, as they do. And the Doctor says that their whole history is Chinese whispers. And I have to ask, what? I have never heard that term before. And I'm just going to say, feels racist.
Don't like it. Didn't like it.
Yeah. So I thought this might actually come up, because even for me, like, kind of rewatching, I just went, huh? How'd that get through? But no, so Chinese whispers is, like, you probably know it over in the US to be, like, the game telephone, where you kind of, like, pass on something and it kind of, like, gets changed as it goes along. And I looked into the etymology of it. very kind of weird takes on it, and there's nothing concrete. There are people that say that potentially it is, and most likely is, a very kind of racist term, but then there's also other people that says that perhaps it is talking about word of mouth traveling across the Great Wall of China, perhaps. And there was also a kind of like Chinese culture fascination that we had in kind of like the 18th century. But still, without any concrete evidence, I'd say just avoid it, just to be safe. Yeah. If it feels wrong, don't say it.
It's one of those things where I used to always just be like, oh, Irish car bombs. And like my wife is like, you should probably stop calling that those. A lot of people died. And I was like, you know, I never thought about that, but that's totally accurate. And it's just like, just stop, definitely stop saying that. But anyway, the idea of it, to your point, is very much like telephone, right? Like that's sort of like what he explains here. That they don't no longer really know why they're fighting, as their history is just getting more and more distorted as it's being passed on from generation to generation. The doctor says that the source isn't for killing, but bringing life. That it can lift them out of the dark times and bring them into the bright sunlight. And he declares the war is over, and he smashes the source to release these gases and start the terraforming process.
I cannot tell you how much I hated this. Okay, I'm so high on this episode. I really like so much of this. The writing, I think, has been really good. All the characters have been really good. What kind of terraforming sauce is designed to be thrown on the ground and broken? And that's how it works? That's how it functions? It's totally fine. The doctor knew this when he just smashed it on the ground and all the little wispy goddess air sauce came out and it was all fine. This made no sense. Why was it in a container to begin with? What was their ultimate plan? How did they get away from this to the point that there's a garden underground and yet like 10 feet up, there's a bunch of like radiation and a bunch of sinking sludge sand or whatever? This made no sense whatsoever and made me like pretty upset about what was happening, because he did it so confidently. He was like, yeah, the war is over. Smashes the one piece of technology that they need to create the Earth. Like, what is going on here? It was infuriating. You can't just smash the sauce like that.
There's something he knew about it that everyone else didn't know. And in fact, it was indeed a secret sauce.
I just love the idea, though, that he's going to smash a highly pressurized, like enough to hold enough gas true. For an entire planet of methane, hydrogen, ammonia, amino acids, proteins, and nucleic acids. That's a pressure, like pressurized enough to be in a small little bubble that's going to then expand out to fill an entire planet in a contained room with the only people that can populate the planet.
Well, I don't really want to talk about how the population's situation, but it's like the size of a volleyball, and he just throws it right on the ground, and this was ridiculous. Like, you cannot just there had to be a better way. Why was there so much infrastructure and technology around protecting the sauce just for him to throw it on the ground? It's just ridiculous. He just threw the sauce on the ground.
I wonder if there was like probably some sort of release mechanism or something like that, but like it malfunctioned a long time ago. I don't know. Maybe there was reasons for it, but yeah, it's a bold move to just be like, I think this is how this works. And just...
Also, was it like already kind of released? Because the whole room was a garden, right? Like was it working? Was it just like a local and then it had to just get released? And then now
dissipated around. It was just only localized to the ship.
So it was like a concentrated sauce. And then once we added the air,
there you go.
Okay, good.
I love how much we're leaning into this. And listen, if it brings Adam joy,
I'm serious. Just watch it for like 1 minute. You'll never hear it the same again. I promise.
Okay, so he smashes the secret sauce. Both armies lay down their weapons, except for Cobb, who naturally tries to shoot the doctor, but Jenny jumps in the way and takes the bullet. Donna asks Martha if Jenny's going to be okay, and Martha basically indicates, nah, man, she's been shot. The doctor has this Mice and Men moment, telling Jenny that they're going to have so many places that they're going to travel to, and she's going to be great. Like, it really feels like Lenny and George here. But Jenny dies in the doctor's arms. The doctor hopes that if they just wait, maybe Jenny will regenerate. However, Martha says that she's like you, but maybe not enough. To which the doctor replies, No, too much. That's the truth of it. She was too much like me. And Adam, I know you don't like this moment. And I'll just say, I don't either, because I'm like, what does that even mean? Yeah.
Okay, that's my problem. It's a better line than makes sense for the situation. That right. is like the problem. Mm-hmm. It's a good line. It really is. Like, that is a very well-written line. I love the delivery from the doctor. I like the whole scene. My problem is it just makes no sense, because that was not her downfall in any way. That is not how we got to the situation, was by her being too much like the doctor. We got to the situation by whatever old creepy dude was like, I'm still pissed off and I'm going to shoot somebody right now. And then she got in the way. Like, okay. I don't know. That seems very irrelevant to her being too much like the doctor, because that's not really what we've like seen a ton from the doctor. We've seen him get out of those types of situations quite often, or convince people to not shoot the gun, or to, you know, come up with some other kind of clever solution that does not get him killed. We have not seen the doctor get shot straight up by someone who refuses to like back down on the situation. So I just didn't understand why he was saying like, oh, you're too much like me, that's why you're dying right now. Like, it just makes no sense. That's not what happened. That's not what's going on here. It's a great line. It's really brilliant. I love that. Like, I love that for him, that like he's trying to experience some kind of dad situation, like whatever. He's like trying to experience that, but like, it just doesn't make any sense for what's going on here. And it was really hard for me to not be like, huh? Like, what do you mean you're too much like him? It's not what's going on. So, you know, whatever. It's fine. It was a well-delivered line. I like the scene overall. I like the episode overall, but there was a moment of like, what?
Yeah, it's very, it is strange for, like, it's a level of the doctor sacrificing himself as a thing he does, but it just felt so weird in this particular context, I guess. Like, I see what they were going for, but it just felt like a little bit off. And I think that's where it also loses me. Again, not enough to like destroy this episode at all, but like enough to just be like, huh? Like, after it was all said and done. Also, missed opportunity for him to go real Goblet of Fire and just be like, my girl! That's my girl! Which is, of course, the, you know, movie he was in. So the doctor grabs Cobb's gun and holds it to his head, but he doesn't do it, saying, I never would. You got that? I never would. And he tells the armies, when you start this new world, this world of human and half, remember that. Make the foundation of society a man who never would. Which is a line that I don't dislike. I mean, I get, again, we're worded very strangely, but the concept of make the society built on the notion of a person who won't just execute another, I think is a pretty solid thing not to do. Like,
yeah.
Low bar.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you could play hopscotch with that bar. I mean, this is like, it's just okay. I also think that the doctor held the gun up to what's his face's head for just way too long. Like, that lasted way too long, because we know, like, there's no world where he's pulling the trigger there, and like, that's mm-hmm. what we're seeing on the TV screen, right? So do we really need it for that long? Like, we can, you know, get the idea and stuff like that. But the real thing that I have to point out here, if you zoomed in on the gun while it was on the screen, just I don't know gun terms, but at the under the handle, whatever, where the very okay. bottom, imagine holding a gun like at the bottom of your palm right here, uh-huh. at the bottom of the gun, there was a little keychain ring. And again, I don't know much about guns, but I'm pretty sure they don't have keychain rings on them. I was really, no, I'm 100% sure.
The edge of a clip?
No. Well, unless I don't know what a clip is. But it was certainly something you could put on a keychain, is all I'm going to say.
I've just pulled it up now. It's definitely there. I wonder if perhaps it's like a futuristic gun / grenade, and it's just there waiting to be pulled.
It could be. I have no idea. But I literally saw this. I caught it in my second watch, because I couldn't stop laughing about the sauce in the first watch. So I caught it in my second watch as I was looking at this, and I was like, there's no way that's what. And then I had to like pause. I zoomed it in, and I was like, yeah, that's what it is. So, you know. That's the analysis people are coming to the pod for, I think.
Naturally.
To see that.
I mean, honestly, fun Easter egg.
Is it even an Easter egg though, or is it just like a weird prop?
A mistake? Yeah. Like catch, someone, I don't know.
Someone had an extra prop and they're like, will this work? And like, yeah.
All right. So let's we're on the quick wrap here. So later, the doctor concludes that Jenny's creation was the reason the TARDIS had brought them there for the first place, but that they got there too soon, and thus they ended up creating Jenny. It's a paradox, an endless paradox. That honestly doesn't make full sense in the way that they're explaining it, but I'll let it go, I suppose. No, I won't. It doesn't make any sense. Like, look, if you're going to do the timeline thing, right, and you're like, oh, it's a paradox, you have to sort of indicate that early on that something is pulling the TARDIS to this particular point in time and establish the idea that it, because of timey-wimey wibbly-wobbly, Jenny's existence kind of echoed backwards, and that's what the TARDIS was being pulled to. But because of Time Machine, they landed before Jenny was created, thus creating Jenny in the first place and creating a time loop. That's all mostly fine. It's just they didn't indicate any part of that at the beginning. Like, and that's the thing that is just like, what I see what you're trying to do. I see it. I see it's like that line. It's like the same line of too much like me. I'm like, I see where you're going here, but you didn't quite land it, which see, is where I am.
Thought perhaps they were trying to set up a kickoff, like future down the line things. Because I always thought with the way in which it kind of does end that maybe they were setting up for something in the future and that maybe they might get to something that kind of leads into it or not. But yeah, in the context of the episode, yeah, it doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, it would have been really interesting if there is there was a follow-up to this, because yeah, so basically the doctor returns Martha home. Martha and Donna talk about traveling with the doctor. Don tells Martha, I'm going to travel that white man forever, which, sure, Jan. Martha hugs the doctor and says goodbye, but not before he tells her there's always something worth living for, Martha, because she was worried that he had basically given up. Meanwhile, back on the planet, Ahath and Klein look at Jenny's body, and suddenly she breathes out this glowing cloud of regeneration energy, basically. And she wakes up and says, hello, boys, and then steals a ship. They try to stop her, but she says, what are you going to do? Tell my dad, which is honestly a great line. She flies off and she says she has plans to save, civilizations to rescue, creatures to defeat, and an awful lot of running to do. It's a very fun ending that, if we're going to head into like the continuity section, I got bad news. This is not a piece of continuity that's picked up on, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, as of yet, it's not a piece of continuity that's been picked on.
Adam, it's been like a decade.
We can't possibly say that like anything from previous Doctor Who lore is ruled out as being something that is continued further, especially as we get people coming back. And I'm just going to point out to you something that is maybe a little interesting tidbit here. That was not originally in this episode, this ending of her kind of reviving, coming back. You don't know whose idea it was? Amazing Stephen Moffat was the one.
Interesting.
Despite the other stuff, I believe this is a Davies episode. I didn't look at all the specific of who's writing or whatever, but it was specifically said that Stephen Moffat had the idea of her being revived at the end. And I really, really love that the fact that the doctor did not see that happen. Only we did. The doctor did not see that happen. And I love that choice. That is an awesome choice.
Yep.
I think the only way in which it could be improved is if she had regenerated into a different form, because then that would have opened it up to a whole other thing of like kind of meeting someone, not knowing who it is, and then this reveal happening. That would have been just put it over the edge for me. But yeah, loved it completely, the fact that you didn't see it at all.
Yeah, that would have been really, really interesting. And we do get a touch of that, and I won't say too much about it because spoilers. But like, that a concept of, yeah, not knowing who you're talking to because of the time lordiness of it all is very fun. But yeah, that's The Doctor's Daughter. Very fun episode overall. I had a really good time with it, except for the weird bits, which still was just like, but at the same time, like, I'm glad this is where they met. Like, they seem to be in a wonderful, loving relationship, which I'm very happy about. And of course, again, the levels of like a doctor's daughter marrying a doctor is very entertaining. But yeah, that's us talking about this episode, but we have quite a bit of feedback about this episode and previous episodes. So let's all get on down to it. Adam,
Yes, we do. And of course, we love getting feedback. So please continue to send it in. We will read any and all of it that comes. So we just love to get that in there as well. So from Brenna, as an episode of Doctor Who, it was meh. But as a showcase of David Tennant / the Doctor himself, it was great. And that's the only thing that bumps it a little bit higher here. I love seeing him reject, then come to terms with having a child, telling Donna about the family he lost, and then being excited again to be a dad, but only having it ripped away by unnecessary violence. But otherwise, I don't think I followed or cared for any of the rest of the story. The time aspect of it was interesting that they thought they had been doing this for generations, but in reality, that was only a brief point of time. So, but like some of it, didn't care for a good portion of it. But I agree with the idea of like time kind of being one of the better elements of this story, at least in my opinion here.
Well, certainly by how we think about like the timey-wimey-ness of it, right? Like,
yes.
I think it passed both our tests here pretty solidly. Is it the best version of it? No, but it does it more than a lot of other episodes have.
Certainly. From Will, fun story and even more interesting when you have the behind-the-scenes knowledge of who the actors are. Or is it more disgusting, according to Kevin? I don't know. Is it creepy?
I didn't
or...
say disgusting. I said weird.
I heard the tone, you know. Will says interesting. I agree with Will. It's more interesting. I loved how they separated Martha and told the story from both sides of this war that was truly over nothing other than word of mouth at the end of it all. I will say that is kind of the other element of it that we didn't talk about a ton, but like we did see both sides represented by companions, right? Like we had kind of both we had Martha's perspective there, not only just from the character development of Martha, but also like Martha experiencing the other side of the war as the Doctor was. So I agree. That's really interesting. You feel so bad for the fish guy who was able to convey emotions without speaking a word. Rip to Greg.
Sorry.
Really sorry to Greg out there. That's a really tough one. From Daniel, the hand tissue sample processing cloning device right off the bat is so original and such a badass way to just throw you into a crazy plot. It's Doctor Who meets weird science. David Tennant's future wife saying hello, dad, to the character who her actual father played and whose last name is the same name as the showrunner. Funny and also a bit disturbing is what he says. I Boom. Love the fish-faced aliens. Yes, so did we. And love how Martha is able to communicate with them simply because she wants to. Brilliant social commentary cloaked in science fiction. That's what the purpose of science fiction is really about, addressing social issues in a palatable format. We certainly talk about that quite a great deal here, actually. He pulls that stethoscope out of his tight-fitting suit, then the mechanical mouse. Must have Mary Poppins carpet bag pockets or something. Tennant can go from snarky sarcasm to gut-wrenching sorrow so quickly. And he also says, if you haven't seen his Hamlet, it's amazing. He is a part of the RSC. Once again, Donna uses her blue-collar knowledge and experience to save the day. When I think about this episode, Peg sacrificing himself for Martha. Peg? Do we know that? That's the name. It's not Greg. He just says Peg. That might be an actual name. I don't know. I just made up Greg on the spot, so whatever. Peg sacrificing himself for Martha is the scene that I think of. You all know about the Big Finish audiobooks, tons of Doctor Who novels. I do not know about this, but I'm very interested. There's a whole series of Jenny books with the Georgia Tennant reading. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, interesting. Ooh. I knew that they have audiobooks for Doctor Who that exist, and they bring back like previous Doctors and stuff to do the readings and things like that. Did not know
that
there is a whole series of Jenny.
I'm going to have to go check those out. I'm very interested in that. And then he finishes by saying, okay, the laying down the guns is a little end of a Brady Bunch episode, but part of the magic of the show is the cheese factor. So certainly would agree with that.
I do love cheese, so.
What about cheese sauce? From
I mean, yes, please. Thank you. Give me some of that. Yeah.
From Nicole, who always writes in really insightful things. This was a very strong Doctor / David Tennant episode. The writing was good, and I loved that the story gave the Doctor a chance to face the aspects of himself he was so uncomfortable with, and then finally being able to get some acceptance of the role he was meant to play, as dark and tragic as it all is. As a parent, this was very relatable. We often see the paths of ourselves we are the most comfortable with magnified in our children. This was a huge growth moment for the Doctor, accepting that he is pretty much a soldier too, and very good at it. He hates that side of himself, but does seem to be able to ultimately accept it as a big part of who he is. Unfortunately, as soon as he's able to accept Jenny as she is taken from him. Such is the nature of being a soldier, so it's quite fitting. But also very sad for the Doctor as he kind of ends up back where he started. Jenny becomes another reminder of all that he's lost. Very sad for the Doctor, especially as he didn't get to see the final scene as we did. I really like that. I have no experience being a parent whatsoever, but it's like really insightful commentary of, you know, who you see in, you know, in others that is representative of a part of yourself. So as always, very insightful comments from Nicole. And then finally, for this episode specifically, we have, let me just see here. Oh, Melissa Woodward has left us some comments here. I'm Dr. Martha Jones. Who the hell are you? Why are some of the best Martha episodes this season? I'll co-sign that. True. I think some of the best Martha episodes are this season. I agree with that. Love Donna figuring out the numbers. The stuff with the Doctor's daughter was pretty heavy-handed, but still impactful. The line, "She was too much like me," got me at the end. Unlike Kevin and I. Well, so I like that it works, right? I think that's very, very impactful there. I found the sci-fi stuff a bit hard to follow, including the part about Jenny bringing them there in the first place. So certainly along the lines of what you're saying, Kevin. The diploid, haploid, I have never heard those words in my life, and if they appeared in this episode, I missed them two times. Explanation of the cloning machine made my head explode a little, but generally enjoyable. And then finally, she asks, also, why does the clone have winged eyeliner? I can't speak to the specifics of cloning devices, but they're very precise in their stylistic.
It is the same reason that in post-apocalypse setting people are wearing makeup. It's the same reason that when you have, you know, movies set in the past, everyone is clean shaven for whatever reason. It's just the same reason as all that.
Is what it is, and it looks good, you know, looks good. We did get a couple of comments about previous episodes. So this was from Poison Sky, the two-parter that we just talked about. First from Brenna. Overall, it was a good episode. I'm glad they clued us in that the Doctor fully knew what was going on with Martha and letting her be the double and triple agent. Otherwise, it was mostly like, man, these guys don't really have a good villain in them. The anti-gun, anti-car rhetoric saves it a little bit, along with the trio of Donna, Martha, Doctor back together. I love the scene with Donna and Gramps. Good old Wilf at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. And then finally, same set of episodes that's being talked about here from the amazing Bill Hall. Martha's back. For me, a pretty standard alien threat two-parter. I do love the Doctor's ongoing rejection of militarism and firearms retweet. So the battle-obsessed Suntarans are a fun foil for him to taunt. The Donna and Martha interactions are great, helping fuel this idea of Donna now experiencing the anxiety and fear of going on adventures with the Doctor. Fun bits, the clone club vibes, and the Doctor in the gas mask, "Are you my mummy?" Overall, some fun stuff here, but it drags in some spots and lacks in the sense of real stakes for me. So I, you know, pretty mixed reviews that we had kind of seen from some of the feedback we got the past couple of weeks, as well as our own thoughts about, you know, some of the ups and downs. But we love getting feedback, love reading it. Really, really interesting stuff. I just really love hearing what everyone has to say about these episodes. So we're not kind of alone here in our own sauce.
Absolutely agree. Like, the feedback, keep it coming. Again, even including past episodes, don't feel like you can't talk about them. Send that feedback in. Send your scores in as well, because we can incorporate those into our rankings, which may shift and change stuff.
Well, they do. I have one small announcement here, because we got scores from some folks from the previous episode. So as a reminder, we did them in two parts, even though we only did one score for the two episodes. We got some additional scores. All of them lowered the averages for the Centaur Stratagem and the Poison Sky. So we're down to a 3.6 overall for Wibbly Wobbly for the pair, which is lower than all of us said. And then the Timey-Wimey got hit even more. It's down to a 1.9 for the Timey-Wimey. So, it is what it is, but we'd love to get the scores in. I can put them in the spreadsheet as late as you want to send them to me. So please do not hesitate to send them in.
All right. Well, let's talk about the scores for this episode. Adam, Melissa sent her scores over. So what does she end up giving this episode?
She did. Okay, so for Wibbly Wobbly, Melissa gave this a 3.5, which I think is overall pretty high. And then for Tommy Wiseau, a 2.5 for her. So lower on that front, still kind of, you know, middle of the range, just below middle of the range for that. So 3.5 and 2.5 from Melissa this week.
All right. And Stuart, did you throw your scores in into the old Discord or...?
Haven't into the Discord, but I do it now.
Yeah. So
Wibbly Wobbly, I was thinking a 3. I thought the story was kind of a little lacking in some parts, but one of the slightly better ones. And I like tried to run the good like 2.5 is an average episode. So yeah, better than most, but a 3. And then for the time, why me? 4 for the concept. Love the concept. I think that it's a bit clunky at points, which is why it's got to come down a bit. But yeah. I think 4 is more than fair.
Yeah, I think so too. Adam, what about you here on these ratings?
Yeah, so I'm right in this range here. I'm at a 3 for Wibbly Wobbly. I did enjoy the story. We get a lot better stories later on. We get, you know, a lot more kind of consistent stuff, but I did really enjoy it. It's, you know, certainly on the upper end. But then I'm going to also give this a 4 for Timey Wimey. I think that like that is the part of this episode that excelled for me in ways that like the Wibbly Wobbly just didn't, that the plot just kind of didn't. I really liked how they utilized time and how they told the story through time. So I'm in a 4 on Timey Wimey.
Yeah, I'm not really super different that far off here. In terms of Wibbly Wobbly, I'd probably give it a 3.25, just giving it a little bit extra specifically because of the behind the scenes chicanery. I think it's very hilarious. And like, again, just because it's weird doesn't mean that it ruined the episode every time she kept saying dad. So that's where that 0.25 specifically comes from. And as for Timey Wimey, yeah, I'm with everyone else. I'm at a 4 here on the Timey Wimey part. This is the stuff that like we don't really get often, specifically to Adam, your point about time usage, right? Like, even though it didn't fully land the idea of like why they got there and how in terms of the paradox, I see what they were going for. And I think that's really interesting, but also just the timeline of stuff that was happening, the weird, you know, passage of time and generations of the people and how things can shift. Time was such a factor into the story that it's hard not to consider that. Plus, when I think about all the other pieces of it and how that came together and the idea and the design of the aliens, the Hath, I really enjoyed that as well. So 4 for me on Timey Wimey.
Okay, well, this is very exciting. So for Wibbly Wobbly, the audience came in 3.26.
Oh, wow.
Right where Kevin it is, leading us, because I was at a 3 and Melissa's at a 3.5. We were at a 3.25 average. We are right there.
Amazing.
Exactly where Kevin is. That's a little harmful to my psyche, I think. But but for Timey Wimey, I just only had a 3. They are lower on this Timey Wimey. And with Melissa's 2.5, the overall average for Timey Wimey is 3.375. But it should be noted here, for only the second time this season, the Timey Wimey is higher than the Wibbly Wobbly. It does not happen very often on this show and through these ratings, but this episode, it is higher. So I totally agree with that. I think we'd like to see it. Obviously, we had a big part in that because we make up a lot of the percentage of the ratings, but I do agree that the Timey Wimey-ness of this episode certainly elevated it above a lot of the other ones.
Yeah, agreed wholeheartedly. It's just... The way that they utilized the sci-fi and the time element in this story, I think, was better than even just the story itself, because this is a weird one in that like they're so intertwined, but the usage of it becomes such a big part of it that I think it deserves that boost on it. So yeah, that's this episode. As mentioned, we touched on continuity, but there really isn't. There's no major continuity threads from this episode that you need to really pay attention to, because Jenny unfortunately does not. Spoiler, return yet to be seen for reasons. She could return pretty soon. But you do have those audio series which we had not known about. So thank you for that note. Yeah, and Stuart, thanks for being here. Thanks for talking Doctor Who, and thanks for talking this episode with us.
This has been a lot of fun. Really kind of getting into the sauce of things.
Yeah, make sure you get some sauce on the way out.
Yeah,
sure
get the sauce.
Pick up some sauce. And then,
pick up some sauce on the way out. And for all the listeners, you do the same. Go out there, get some good sauce. And until then, And until next time, oh, right, I should actually say before we go what we're talking about next, which is, of course, going to be the very next episode in sequence. It's going to be season 4, episode 7, The Unicorn and the Wasp. And it's going to be a weird one. So until then, all on Z.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.